We're going to call this meeting to order of the Energy, Senator Colk, the Energy Utilities and Communications Committee hearing. And we have before us Senate File 548. I couldn't resist that. I never get to scold Senator Colk. So, Senator Benson, you have a bill in front of us.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, fellow committee members. I have before you Senate File 548. I also am going to ask for the A2 amendment, that we could edit that A2 amendment orally before I move it as an author's amendment. So if you would please look at line 131.
Senator Benson, we're going to move that A2 amendment first, please.
We need to move the amendment first. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Then I would like to move the A2 amendment as an author's amendment.
I'm sorry, Senator Benz. Go ahead and fix it.
Okay.
That way.
Line 131. After the comma, including a mechanism to, please change the word annually to periodically, examine, and cross out the earnings of a utility operating under, so that the phrase in that sentence would read, including a mechanism to periodically examine a multi-year rate plan to ensure rates charged under the plan remain just and reasonable.
Does everyone have that? And Senator Benson, can you just give us a little... We'll go through the whole A2 amendment when you were done.
Okay. And so with that edit, I would like to introduce the A2 amendment as an author's amendment. It is a delete-all amendment for Senate File 548.
Great. Any questions on the A2 amended amendment?
Madam Chair, that's essentially the new takes the place of what we have in our file here. That's the bill?
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. It is.
Delete all.
I didn't track.
Madam Chair.
Senator Metzen. Senator Cooley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I think the amendment was changed before you acted on it, so it isn't officially an amended amendment.
You're right, Senator Cooley. We'll get this down.
Oh, that's scary. You're paying it.
Can't we just incorporate
all those in favor of the amended, the A2 amendment? Say aye.
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 Opposed? Nay. Amendment is adopted. Senator Benson, would you like to explain the A2 amended amendment?
Yes, thank you. There are two pieces to the legislation that stands before you, a small expansion of riders and a multi-year rate plan. Let me deal with riders first. The rider expansion is small, but it is in keeping with an existing rider for the cost of fuel used in energy generation. The sorbents, reagents, and chemicals that are used to control, that are used to control emissions from an electric generation facility are publicly traded commodities. Their price is not something that a utility controls. It's a very transparent cost, and it is consumed as part of the electric generation facility, so varies by the generation, and therefore economically mirrors the cost for fuel. And I feel that it is appropriate that it would have a rider similar to the one for fuel. That's part number one. Part number two is a multi-year rate plan. It is new for us in Minnesota, but as you know, businesses, including utilities, don't look at a single year when they're making their business plans. They look at multiple years. And the goal of the second part, the multi-year rate plan, is to take the transparency that businesses have for their own expenses in out years and bring them to the PUC so that all the stakeholders get a view of what is coming. And from that information, the stakeholders, the PUC, the utilities, could all decide together if a multi-year rate plan is appropriate and if it gives the best information to consumers. And so that is my motivation for the second part of the plan. And I do have some testifiers. If we could ask Scott Walensky.
Welcome, Mr. Walensky. If you could just please state your name.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott Walensky, W-I-L-E-N-S-K-Y.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott Walensky, and I'm Vice President of Regulatory Affairs and Resource Planning for Xcel Energy.
Thank you.
Appreciate the committee's time this afternoon and Senator Benson's leadership on this issue. Try to keep my testimony relatively brief, but to highlight the need for this new tool that Senator Benson is proposing through this legislation. Currently, the utility industry is in a significant construction cycle. The industry has gone through these types of cycles in the past, our last one being in the late 70s and early 80s. In the past 5 years, we've resolved uncertainty regarding continued operations of our nuclear plant, modernized our coal fleet, and for the first time in decades began reinforcing our high-voltage transmission lines. These investments often involve multiple projects that span several years, something that traditional rate cases based on a single test year, a look at a snapshot in time, don't adequately address. So the rate-making paradigm of the previous period needed to evolve. And in 2003, the legislature authorized a number of rider recovery mechanisms to encourage these investments in utility infrastructure. Riders allowed utilities to recover these important costs in a more timely manner, thereby ensuring reliable service and improving our environmental performance. The rider mechanisms authorized by the legislature and implemented by the commission have been a crucial tool in facilitating the infrastructure investments we've made to date. But we're making investments not just through riders, but also through vehicles that are traditional in the sense of you file a general rate case at the commission. And just to give you some sense of that, in 2011, we are currently in a pending rate case, and we will be asking for recovery of hundreds of millions of additional new investment that will go into service in 2011 that's outside of any rider mechanism. So what we're seeing with this need to work on improving our infrastructure on all aspects of our business, both our generation fleet, our transmission system, and our aging distribution system, is that our costs are moving, growing faster than our sales, and we have now a multitude of riders and rate cases going on at the same time. While the tools that we put in place today have been critical to facilitate nearly $3 billion in investment at the state, create new jobs, and make sure that we have reliable service, we need additional tools looking forward. While we've achieved a lot in the past, we're looking at an investment curve that actually grows even further in the next 5 years as we seek to add over $1 billion to modernize our nuclear plants so that they can last another 20 years, so that we can build out the transmission system to all parts of the state and support reliability there, and to upgrade our distribution system, nearly $700 million anticipated in the next 5 years. So in light of the size of these investments, as well as other cost increases we're experiencing in our operations due to Nuclear Regulatory Commission compliance, increases in chemicals, as Senator Benson addressed, which has become a much greater piece of our cost of business, as well as pressures that other businesses have faced, increases in healthcare costs, those types of challenges, we are looking for a different tool to try to achieve the same goals, but in a much more comprehensive, transparent fashion, where we're taking a look at all of our costs and revenues in a more global look. The need for this legislation first surfaced out of a request from the legislature to examine how riders were working. That occurred in 2009, and the Commission issued a utilities rate study where it looked at various alternatives to rate rider mechanisms and actually included a look at different types of mechanisms that such as the one authorized by this legislation as an potential alternative. The Commission found that riders did facilitate the investments that the legislature intended, but also took a look at whether or not there's a better way to do things. And when I spoke to the Legislative Energy Committee last summer, we actually informed the committee of our intent to try to explore this tool as a potential substitute to some of the riders and rate cases and to work with stakeholders to see if we could develop it.
And that's how we've gotten to the legislation we have to date. It's time that we have Minnesota rate making evolve again, just as we did in 2003 when we began to implement riders. The legislation provides the clarity needed that this type of tool, if we could work out a plan that everybody believes is in everybody's best interest of the state, that means both customers as well as the regulators who have to administer the plan and the utility, then it allows a certainty that a plan like that could go forward. Just so that you understand a little bit more about a multi-year plan, we think the benefits of that approach, it provides greater predictability of prices for customers. We continuously hear that our customers want to know how much our price is going to increase. They don't pay for riders and they don't pay for base rate increases. They pay a bill and they want to know what their prices are going to be looking like. This gives them some sight into that. It's not perfect, but it's a much better tool than how we've been approaching it. It allows both the regulators, customers, and other stakeholders not to look at projects one at a time as they come into rates, but to look at them more comprehensively so that we get consensus on the company's growth trajectory, the benefits that investment trajectory provides for the states, and what the company plans, you know, looks like for, as Senator Benson indicated, for many years, so that there is a significant understanding at the outset of any of these projects, not after the fact, as to the consequences and impacts on everybody involved. And lastly, it's going to, every plan that we've looked at in every other state has required that there be incentives for the utility to operate more efficiently. And we would fully expect that the plan we're developing would incorporate all of those same features. Some of the things that a multi-year plan will do better is that it will make sure we're taking a look, as I mentioned, at all those costs and revenues. And as the amendment that we just walked through, the wording change on, it assures that the rates will remain reasonable, just and reasonable throughout the term of the plan, that there'll be no utility windfall. And there are plenty of mechanisms and rate designs of plans that you can use to assure that, because there is uncertainty in the future and there's uncertainty in forecasts. And we'll work with stakeholders, and we'll commit to you to work with them to design a good plan Thank for you. This state as we move forward. We appreciate the hard work of the OES, the commission staff, the chamber, and the environmental community, as well as the other utilities, to try to forge a consensus on this. We think it's brought a very high level of discussion and professionalism to trying to figure out a new way to move forward in Minnesota. We think that the SF 548 also provides for an additional change that Senator Benson mentioned, which is appropriate, which is it allows for chemicals to flow through the fuel clause mechanism today. Currently, customers pay dollar for dollar our cost of fuel, their commodities we buy in the market, no markup. Chemicals are the exact same way, and they become a much more material part of our business and more volatile as they experience investment from overseas and other things in demand from overseas, such that the price of those is going up and down, just like you would see in many of our commodity energy markets. And as a result, either side, either the customer or the company, if we set those in general rate cases, could experience harm. The change to the fuel clause makes sense, and we appreciate your support of that. Short, we've worked hard to try to make this a good tool for our customers, our regulators, and stakeholders to manage through a difficult period of infrastructure investment, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Walensky. Senator Metzen.
Mr. Walensky, in Subdivision 19 multiple year plan, it doesn't mandate, the way I understand it, that the commission approve a multi-year plan. The word may is used a couple of times, so there is some out there on both sides, the way I understand it. Is that correct?
Mr. Walensky?
It just says may, so.
Madam Chair, Senator Metzen, that's correct. There is no mandate to do this.
They may.
It just creates clarity. We actually believe that they had the authority to do this, but this provides the additional certainty, since it is a more unique approach, that if we move forward with the plan if we gain support for one, and the commission actually believes it's a good tool for rate making, and they approve one that the legislature has been involved in authorized, that kind of new tool.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
What are the other states? You're welcome, Senator Mezen. What are the other states that have a multi-year rate plan?
There are a number of states that have plans, Madam Chair. New York, Louisiana, California. There's about eight states right now. They have different types of plans. Some have formulary rate plans where you just annually sort of reset rates on based on a formula. The ones that have the multi-year projections are the ones that we're trying to tailor it a little bit more to. But there's a number of them out there. Those were the ones that came to my mind. I can probably get a list if you want more.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Senator Benson. It's a good bill. I'm co-authors. Got it. But as I, as I've contemplated the bill and had conversations with folks about it, a couple of things have come up, and so I just wanted to ask about those and give either you or Mr. Walensky an opportunity to respond. The first is on the, including in the fuel cost adjustment, the sorbents, reagents, and chemicals piece. Can you give us a couple questions? Can you give us an order of magnitude, a sense of how expensive these are, maybe proportionally to the fuel costs? What are we talking about? I just have no sense of that.
Sure.
First part of my question, and then secondly, how volatile is the price, and do the utilities have an opportunity to manage those costs in any fashion through futures or hedging or trying to fix a price for bulk purchasing, that sort of thing?
Mr. Walensky.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, two things. In terms of magnitude, clearly a smaller portion of the pie than our actual fuel costs. Our fuel costs or purchased energy costs, which is just a different way of more economically substituting fuel, run in the neighborhood of about $700 to $1 billion, depending on the price of natural gas, and that's been come down quite a bit, so it can come down. And we've seen our chemical costs rise from a very small part of our business, maybe $5 to $10 million a year, to closer to $50, $60, $70 million in 2008 when prices actually spiked dramatically, which gets to your second piece, which is how high can they get? We have seen significant volatility in commodity pricing for chemicals related to the value of the dollar, related to the demand from overseas, particularly China, that has driven commodity markets both up and down. I mean, when we were moving into 08, right before the dramatic recession that we entered, prices were escalating very quickly and dropped just as quickly, just as energy costs did or fuel costs did. So, I mean, they're very mirror. They're moving very similar, and they can be, as they become a much larger part of our portfolio, as we need more for environmental compliance, a very significant cost mover.
So,
Senator Dibble.
So to actually ask three questions, as it turned out, unbeknownst to me. So my third question was, did you have the opportunity to manage those costs?
Oh, I apologize. I missed that.
Is it Mr. Walensky?
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble. You can, just as you could with fuel, look to try to hedge those prices. It was a little more difficult because these are fairly new markets. So what you're benchmarking off of isn't, a trend line that's as transparent and clear with indexes that you've tracked for years.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So where you want to place a hedge and what timing and the value of that hedge is a lot more difficult because we're gaining a lot of experience with these markets right now. I would expect that you'd have more control of that in several years. Or better ways to inform yourself about how to make those decisions. But, there is a cost to hedging, and we've seen this just recently with the natural gas commodity market where we've seen prices drop dramatically. Had we laid in significant hedges in prior periods, we would have, not been able to take advantage of that. So typically, you have to weigh the cost of that hedge against the value it's providing, and at least most of the time we found that's probably not in our customers' greatest interest.
Senator Dibble.
One follow-up. Yeah, I know. It's playing the market is what you're doing when you're hedging a little bit. So I understand there is a risk involved. I appreciate that. But I do wonder, and maybe you can respond to the concern about, maybe the answer is in how you manage your fuel costs. If this is a direct pass-through, do we take away an incentive for you to try to manage those costs in some form or fashion? Or is there some other, like, does the commission take a look at that?
Mr. Walensky.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, the first word of that paragraph starts with prudent, and I believe that would allow any of the agencies to take as deep a look on our practices as they like. I think, we'll obviously, as we move towards implementing this, try to become more transparent about how we do acquire fuel, work, show them our supply chain and how that works and how we actually acquire our fuels. I think it's less about the price you actually end up with and the process you're using to try to get there, and they would find that we have very competitive, robust processes to try to make decisions about that. And if, to the extent, but those processes also have a commodity index component to them that neither the supplier nor us will control.
Thank you.
Could you please explain again the risks, if there are any, to the utilities on the multi-year rate plan?
Madam Chair, I believe there are risks to the utility from the perspective of, if you think about the goals of a multi-year plan the way that the company is currently thinking about it, you're laying out what you expect your cost structure and your revenue stream will be for several years, and you're trying to say if costs are growing faster than revenues, you would need a rate increase in each of those years for some pre-established amount. There would, because we're a utility and an essential service to the communities we serve, you'd never want to see us go too far south. That's typically a bad thing for the state and its customers. So there's probably some release valves in the event that those things don't happen. But, there's a significant amount of risk of managing to that future performance because we're not prescient, and we can't anticipate every cost increase that we may experience. We can't anticipate whether our sales growth, for example, may be exactly what we predicted it to be. And, in fact, if we had been in one through the recession, we would have been in a fairly dramatic circumstance because our sales dropped nearly 4% in a year. We were projecting them to grow 1.5%. So those are the kind of risks, depending on how you design a plan, that at least we would face, to some degree, again, with some outlet valves because there's some bad places. I don't think anybody would want this to go. But certainly a much greater risk than just simply being able to say I'll file a rate case because our costs have gone up. So, yes, I think if we undertake a plan like this, we'll be taking it with a very wide open view that we are committing to a fairly deep need to perform well, and that's going to require us to be more. One of the things that I think is advantageous about these plans is that it forces, I think, a very close look at it from our perspective of making sure we can manage those costs going effectively.
Very good. Very good. Any other questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Walensky. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Grant, Magnus. Director Grant, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Director Grant, how are you?
I'm just fine. It feels like I've been spending a lot of time here.
Get a cot.
For the record, Madam Chair, my name is Bill Grant. I'm the director of the Office of Energy Security at the Department of Commerce. And we've worked very closely with Senator Benson, XL, and the other utilities, and all the other stakeholders in working on the language that's in front of you this afternoon. And we support the language in its current form. As Mr. Walensky points out, we're going now through a period of rather excessive or large amounts of investment in utility infrastructure. It's not excessive. It's needed. But what that is resulting in is a very high degree of workload at the OES, at the Public Utilities Commission, in terms of annual rate cases. And of course, we're not the only ones experiencing that. That also falls on the utilities themselves and all of the other participants in rate cases. The other situation that we face is that the rider structure that we've been using to address increasing capital costs to deal with new infrastructure investment has really become kind of an unsustainable situation where we've put a lot of these costs into riders, and I have to accept some of the blame for that. I was probably involved in the first and largest of those riders, the Metropolitan Emission Reduction Program, which kind of paved the way for a number of riders to come. They were useful in that they helped us implement policies that this body wanted to see carried forward, but they tended to siphon off or sequester a fair amount of what would normally have been treated in a rate case and put them in the form of riders. And the combination then of having to address those riders on a routine basis, as well now as in some cases almost annual rate filings from utilities, has really put a great deal of strain on the regulatory system and all of the stakeholders to it. We don't know yet really whether a multi-year test year approach, as Xcel has proposed and as Senator Benson's bill makes clear the commission has authority to use, will really resolve those issues. We think, though, yeah, that it's worth testing through this authority such a process to see whether or not it meets some of these goals of addressing the infrastructure investments that we need to make while managing the workload issues that creates.
I don't know what that does.
The other point, I think, is that the multi-year approach allows for more than just the short snapshot of time that a single-year test year of future costs allows us to look at, thus, we hope, ensuring greater transparency. The OES and the Public Utilities Commission, of course, have the obligation to assure that utility rates are just and reasonable. And that's not to say that allowing the current approach won't allow us to do that. But we think that we may be able to have somewhat greater transparency of a range of costs that we're facing rather than a very narrow and short-term costs. I also believe that because we're looking in some cases at older facilities that providing continual upgrades to may not be in the public's best interest, that this will allow us to look at the full range of costs of those investments and decide whether or not, as a state, those are the investments we want to make. Is this good money after bad or not? For all of those reasons, the office supports Senate File 548 as amended. I'd also like to introduce Kate O'Connell, our manager of energy planning and advocacy, and if she has some additional comments she'd like to make, and then we can stand for any questions that you might have.
Director Grant, I appreciate your previous experience that you've had, and you're sympathetic to the issue, and thank you very much for working with Senator Benson on this. I would like to know her oral amendment, what that means to you, and if you can go through that, please.
Perhaps Ms. O'Connell could speak to that.
Welcome, Ms. O'Connell.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairwoman and members. I just wanted to, first of all, to say that I appreciate being able to work with Senator Benson. I think this bill is very well designed, and it will work not only in the short term, but it's a bill that's designed to work in the long term. And to your question about the oral amendment, we do appreciate that amendment, actually. That's an example of giving the commission the flexibility to decide how to design the multi-year plan in process. For example, certainly we'll want to make sure that rates are just and reasonable. That's critical. That's already in Chapter 216B03, and it's a good thing to repeat it here, too, because it's such an important factor not only for all ratepayers. It's important for the utility and for the integrity of the system. So the way that the amendment is amended, which it wasn't an amended amendment, but the amendment...
We make up my own rules here.
We like that amendment. We like the amendment. And I think it's important to know from the public policy perspective, why would it ever be a good idea to have a multi-year plan? And I think you've heard Xcel's version of what they would like to see. And one thing about the beauty of the bill is that it would allow other perspectives. And I think from a public policy perspective, what the commission would be likely to see is the OES, we might suggest a more limited use, at least at first, of a multi-year plan. And why would the public want to see a multi-year plan? An example would be, let's say you've got a utility who already has an approved certificate of need to expand a nuclear power plant. They're going to incur capital costs over time to be able to put all of those expansions into place. We know that now. And under the current system, they would have to file back-to-back rate cases. They would have to do it year after year after year. My staff would have to look at all of the costs, the pension costs, the labor costs, the costs of every aspect of providing service, when those costs may not be driving the need for the rate case. It's not, or they're not changing, or maybe they shouldn't be changing. We think it'd be a good idea to keep a cap on those rates, on the rates pertaining to those costs as we have right now, and give the utility an incentive to minimize those costs. But let's make sure that the utility is able to obtain the capital in order to prudently expand its system, especially when they've already had a certificate of need that allows them to do that. And the reason why that's a good idea for ratepayers is when the capital markets see that the utility is going to be able to get recovery over time of what they need to add to their system, they should be able to get more better financing terms, and that should help ratepayers. So there's, I think, the bill itself is well designed, again, because it allows for this discussion to happen in front of the commission, and I'm sure we will be discussing, and there'll be different perspectives on how the multi-year plan should work. But I think there's room for a lot of different interpretations, and there certainly is room for this to be in the public interest. So in our discussions with all of the stakeholders, I think that's been a key component that we've looked at. And I, again, appreciate the time that we've been able to spend on that.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions, members? Senator Dibble.
Thanks. So I think I heard, Madam Chair, but I just want to be clear, the oral amendment to strike annually and the earnings of utility operating under to periodically. That's a good thing. Did I hear that correctly? All right. Because I was wondering about that when the change came forward. Because I do know, Madam Chair, that that's another one of the conversations I had in the last few days.
And Madam Chair, if I might.
Mr. Grant.
I think that the word periodically suggests, rather than annually, would suggest that we have to do it every year.
Right.
Periodically suggests that hopefully we can do it less than every year. That's our hope.
On a need basis.
On a need basis. Right. That's correct.
Right. Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, what might trigger the periodic review in between the multi-years?
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, it would depend on the circumstances. Mm-hmm. For example, if we have a utility that is going to be adding, let's say we have a rate plan that's designed the way I would design it, where we're only allowing increases when there is a large expansion of capital, but that capital expansion is going to happen 18 months down the line.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't make sense to do the annual review when, in fact, the trigger isn't happening until later on in the multi-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly our goal would be to do everything we can to review the rates prior to when they go into effect or shortly thereafter. But we do need flexibility because, frankly, our workload is determined very much by the filings that the utilities make, and those are factors that are beyond our control. So we have deadlines for when we have to file our testimony, where we have to file our briefs and so forth. And we do everything we can, including getting up very early in the morning, I sort of like you guys do at the end of the session, to make sure that we take care of all of those things. But it helps to have the flexibility in case we have a workload that's more than we can handle at a given time. But I really think the goal is, for our perspective, is to try to do the review in a timely manner at a time when it makes sense. But annually may not make sense.
Thank you.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Grant, I'm just wondering, on 2.1 and 2.2 here, the 90-day extension beyond the existing authority, is that an appropriate enough time, or should it be 120 days, or what? Can you just speak to that?
Director Grant.
Madam Chair and Senator Howe, this was language that we proposed in conversations with the company. We do feel that an extra 90 days is adequate to address what might become a more complicated case than a single-year test year case. And so for those reasons, we felt comfortable with an additional 90 days. Okay. And the hope, Madam Chair and Senator Howe, is that we would be able to stay within the original deadline. But in the event that wasn't possible, a bit of a safety valve on the time requirement was a helpful consideration for us.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, Senator Howe. Oh, Senator Kubley, thank you.
Madam Chair, and I don't know who to address it to, but it seems to me that the change makes very little difference. With the word may in there, you've already got flexibility. Periodically, I think the PUC already has a couple good attorneys, and they're going to get another one, the way it sounds. But periodically could be interpreted to mean longer than a year or shorter than a year.
Well, Senator Benson.
And thank you, Senator, for your question. This entire phrase was inserted to strengthen the position of the consumers of utilities so that they can, if they feel the rates are too high or outside the boundaries of just and reasonable, they can go to the PUC and ask that they take another look. And by removing the word annually and changing it to periodically, if we left it at annual, then July 1st of every year, work would have to be done, whether anybody asked for it or felt a need for it. So changing it to periodically just reminds people that it can happen, but it doesn't have to be looked at every year.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Benson, it just seems to me that the permissive language that says they may alleviate the mandate, so to speak. So, it's not a big issue. I think it's fine either way. But
the commission is left to their best judgment. Thank you, Madam Chair, as to when this would occur.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Two more questions. One I already had, and then one just occurred to me. Madam Chair, to Mr. Grant, I'm not quite seeing, or Chief Author Benson, I'm not quite seeing in the bill where we get away from the single-year test and we look to a multi-year test. Is that just implied by the fact that we're doing a multi-year rate plan, that we would look to a multi-year test, as we're looking back to look forward? Or I don't quite understand how we get away from the single-year test year.
Senator Benson?
I believe the Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, believe beginning with line 1.21, the term multi-year rate plan refers to a plan establishing the rates may change for each year of a specified period of years to be covered by the plan. That implies prospective looking.
Right.
And while you're correct, the word test isn't there, I believe the specified period of years would define the coverage of the expenses and revenues that should be reviewed.
As you're looking prospectively.
Prospectively.
Okay, I get that. And then you look
Senator
to thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies. And then, of course, I see that we look at the factors in Subdivision 6, which I did my little homework and I read. Then another question, Madam Chair. I was perusing the original bill, language, which had a lot of rate rider reform, which I think was very attractive, and I understand that, you know, that might have been a bridge too far, but this might be just a rhetorical question or something to the committee or to the chair. You know, if we start down this path, you know, I think the aspiration of this bill is that we don't run into a lot of the path that Mr. Grant put us on.
Yes.
We don't do a lot more. I mean, is there any way to control for that? Does this help us control for some of that? I mean, a lot of this is, you know, a function and a product of kind of unholy political deals to get some stuff done. I understand. But do we make a commitment here that it stops here? We got this multi-year rate plan design. Do you think this helps us? Not. I mean, I regret that we're not cleaning up some of the riders and kind of rolling them in and et cetera and kind of resetting, you know, resetting the board a little bit. But
Madam Chair.
Can we stop doing more of them in the future?
Director Grant.
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, I mean, I think the hope here is that on a going forward basis, we can reduce the incentive that is otherwise in place to seek riders for large capital cost improvements to the utility system. I don't think we're going to know whether or not we're accomplishing that until we've been through one of these and we have a new must have on our wish list that somehow isn't being addressed through the multi-year plan. But certainly the hope is that we're on a going forward basis reducing the incentive to trigger or seek new riders. Of course, that's an issue that, as you kind of suggest, needs to be amongst the body in terms of resisting that and suggesting perhaps to utilities that are wanting riders for various costs or other interest groups that the utility in question pursue a multi-year plan approach in the alternative.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just one. It occurs to me that maybe this periodic examination might be a mechanism. You know, what might happen is, of course, someone around here comes up with a really good idea, and it's going to cost money. Or the utilities come up with an idea, and it's going to cost money. And so, you know, in order to facilitate that happening, you know, we'll let you recover it, you know, and we give you a rider. Maybe we can refer, when we're crafting those ideas, to this periodic examination process and figure out a way for the commission to wave over at Senator Anderson. Be her job figure out how to roll those into the larger rate picture. What's the thought?
Well, Senator Dibble, this is a moving target, and I think mm-hmm. it's new for everybody, and I think they're very flexible, and obviously the lines of communication are open. And my question, Senator Benson, is this is affectionately known as the Excel bill, but are all utilities online and have been a part of the process?
We had a very nice roundtable of the stakeholders and listened to everyone's concerns. And I believe everyone impacted by this has been given opportunity to be heard. And at this point, I hear no loud objections.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions for the two?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Benson. Just one more observation, I guess. When you say delete everything after the enacting clause, the enacting clause on your original bill specifically names the PUC. But on page two, when you delete that and add a new one, it no longer mentions the PUCs in a specific way. So the commission, you know, unless you're relying on, you know, what it says in 216B to identify that for you, it just says, refers to the commission, and certainly it's implied it's the PUC, but usually that is spelled out.
Senator Coopley, I think we'll let Mr. Fuller answer that. It was, there's PUC in the first part, and then the second part is on the...
Yeah, on the back side, Madam Chair. The new clause doesn't say anything about the PUC.
Madam Chair, Senator Coopley, well, the title is no part of the bill, so if you want to suggest a title change, we can make note and do that through the engrossing process, but it has no implication for the subject matter of the bill.
That'd be fine, Senator Coopley?
That'd be fine.
We'll do that. Thank you.
I just didn't want a minor thing like that to throw it off track.
You don't get paid enough, Senator Coopley. You're on the job, I'm telling you. Good job. No, that's good. Thank you. Anybody else? Thank you very much, Director Grant and Ms. O'Connell. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. And Mr. Glahn.
These guys are every day.
Welcome, Mr. Glahn.
Madam Chair, Sanders, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to briefly address you this afternoon. I wanted to give a little bit of background and perspective on this bill, because I think I can bring some experience to the committee here that you haven't had the benefit of, because back in my past life as a consultant, I did work in a number of different states, including New York, which Mr. Wilensky mentioned as one of the states that does have a multi-year rate plan. And I wanted to share from the consumer perspective my experience, and this is, I will freely admit, more than a decade ago. I forgot to identify myself. My apologies, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Glahn, and I live in Edina, Minnesota. And so everybody here knows that the state of Minnesota, the sovereign entity of the state of Minnesota, has the authority to regulate rates charged by public utilities. And the mechanism that you exercise those powers is by delegating them to the Public Utilities Commission. So my observation working with the Public Utilities Commission here, public service commissions, other states, has been that institutionally those entities are very literalist in that they understand they are exercising delegated powers and look to the entity that delegated those powers for direction. And so we had some discussion in an earlier hearing about some other unrelated legislation, such as the Excelsior Energy RDF grant, where the once it came in front of the commission looked at statute, and I would put the inverted block rate statute in that same category. The commission looks at statute and says, well, the folks who hold the power were sending us a signal, so we should listen to them. So this is to the observations made by Senators Coobley and Metzen about the word may. Yes, the word may is in there, and everyone understands that to be permissive. But to put this in the context of we're just giving another tool for the toolbox, my experience with commissions has been that they see something written in statute as a direction to them that they should undertake some effort. So I would hope you understand that this is not just another tool in the toolbox, that the commission will literally take this as we should be approving these kind of plans. Otherwise, why did the legislature take the time and trouble to write it in the statute? So I think we'll have to assume going forward that these plans will be used by the commission because that's the signal you've given them. The flip side of that literalist interpretation, I've observed that the commission is very, very reluctant to read into legislation and statute something that isn't there. So, and I've been unfortunate to have been on the short end of that, whereas I would argue that certain protections are implicit or go along with whatever the concept is. I've been unfortunately been told, no, if it isn't in the words, you can't read it in there. So I was happy to see the changes made to the A2 amendment calling for this periodic review. Unfortunately, I still have a couple of concerns about how this will be implemented going into the future. And so there is, in just 60 seconds, there's an inherent asymmetry in the way public utility rates are set in Minnesota or any other state. The utility has all the information. They have access to their accounting records and their books. And so they control when the process is initiated. So the day that the revenues become insufficient to support the cost and earn a fair return, they can go to the Public Utilities Commission and file for an increase. And it doesn't happen all the time, but by and large, through the interim rate statute, they get immediate relief or near immediate relief. And so they're protected on the short end of things. On the other end of things, when a utility is earning more than its allowed rate of return, the customer, the consumer is in a very difficult position. They don't have access to that information until well after the fact. In Minnesota, utilities file May 1, a report that shows what they earned in the previous calendar year. So there's already almost 6 months of, well, we've been overpaying before we even knew we were overpaying. And then you have to get either the utility to file a motion or you petition the utility to open a rate case. And I like to tell folks that that happens and that's allowed under law, but and it happens like clockwork twice a century. So when you're trying to get relief for ratepayers, it's the burden of proof shifts to you to prove that we should undertake this huge upheaval to bring a utility in for a rate case when they're not otherwise inclined to do so. And so my concern with the way the amendment reads now is that I was glad to see an addition of this concept of a periodic examination, because what we've run into in other states that have tried this is the idea you get a multi-rate plan in place and the concept of a deal's a deal comes into play, that if we discover in a five-year plan, 3 years down range, that the utility's over-earning, that, you know, nothing you can do about it. We made our deal. It was just and reasonable. We put it in place, and we can't take a look at it until the deal is up. And so, and that asymmetry works the other way, though, because we heard from Mr. Walensky, and I fully agree with him, that electricity is a essential service. Natural gas are essential services in Minnesota. We would not allow a utility to go under because they got into financial difficulty because their revenues were insufficient. So if 3 years into a five-year plan, if it wasn't working for the utility, then they would get relief. We would not let them go under. But my concern is 3 years into a five-year plan, would a customer be able to get relief if, for example, we look at the economics of the industry at the trough of a business cycle like today and lock in place those economics into a five-year plan with guaranteed 5% increases going into the future every year, and the economy turns around and we have more revenues for the utility, but we've locked into this rate increase year after year after year based on recessionary economics. So that's why it's important to have this periodic review, which you've written into the amendment. I was not thrilled with the wording of it because we heard, and I understand, I was in Mr. Grant's place for several years, that our regulators, the OES, and the PUC are overworked and understaffed, and these annual rate cases are a big drag. And I would see the temptation as a regulator to say, hey, we can get out of the annual rate case game. That's going to be a huge lift on our workload. But I don't have that perspective now. I pay my electric bill every month, and I have the perspective of a ratepayer. And we talk about, you know, I don't mind the annual rate cases so much. We heard about certainty. I'm going to die. That certainty doesn't give me any comfort. So if you, from a ratepayer that I know my rates are going to go up 5% a year, you know, it helps me with my planning. But, you know, I might not take that as a good deal. So I'm concerned about because of the asymmetry built into the system, that the periodic reviews, I was disappointed to hear that they would be less than annual because, you know, maybe we don't look until we're 3 or 4 years down to a plan, but the over-earning happened in year two. So it would have been nicer that we would have periodic reviews that happened every year in conjunction with the jurisdictional reports coming out so we don't get too far downrange, because thanks to, and I believe appropriate, principles and case law dealing with retroactive rate making, we can only change the rates going forward. And so if we're in an over-earning situation, we can't do anything about what happened in the past. We can only do something about what happened in the future. And just with the nature of it, with the lag in reporting and the year-long cost time it takes to go through a rate case, from a ratepayer perspective, if we're in a multi-year plan with an over-earning situation, we're talking a minimum of 18 months before relief can be had. So I'm concerned that we're doing it less than annually, and I was concerned that we took out the word earnings because, you know, what is it we're supposed to be looking at? I took some comfort having the word earnings in, that we would examine what the rate of return was of a utility, that we weren't just, which I think Senator Dibble was implying, that we were taking a periodic look at the mechanism itself rather than the results that we're obtaining from the rates. So I have concern about that. I had suggested some other language that would explicitly give to the Utilities Commission the ability to suspend a rate plan. Again, I'm concerned about a deal is a deal. We'd be happy to talk about tweaking it, but you know the relief can only come if you hit the pause button. And I don't see that kind of language in here because I believe the commission will be reluctant to read in ratepayer protections that aren't explicitly written in. And one of the reasons why I wanted to come and speak before you was for the tape so we can go back years down range and understand why we took the words earnings out, what we meant by periodically, because this will all be subject to litigation at some point in the future. And I just wanted to get one more phrase in. I know I'm over my time, but one more phrase in. I just want to make it clear that what you're doing this afternoon is not a de facto revenue decoupling mechanism, because that's my concern by having the periodic review that would become a de facto true-up mechanism, which I don't think Excel intends by putting this bill forward, but I just wanted to get those two words, revenue decoupling, on the tape so we're clear that that's not what we're trying to accomplish this afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Klein. Is there any questions for him? Always good to see you, Mr. Klein. You bring a good perspective. Thank you. Any other questions for the author? Senator Benson, would you like to move the bill?
I would like to move Senate File 548 out of committee and to the floor.
As amended?
As amended.
Senator Benson has moved that Senate File 548 as amended be recommended to pass. Any more discussion on the bill? There's no further discussion. Seeing none, the question on the motion of Senator Benson, Senate File 548 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Nice job, Senator Benson. Thank you very much,
she
members. I'm not sure what we have for next week, but
she did say that, didn't she?
Okay. I believe we have a couple. Yeah. You call who?
Madam Chair, I think you said motion fails, and I think the motion passed.
Did I say that? I am not.
I was going to call for a division, but you know.
I said prevail. I said prevail.
Oh, prevail. I'm sorry. Oh, great.
Beating
we didn't
adjourned.
Hear the word.
Oh, God, I just don't know about it.